And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park.
Anyone with any sense who was in trouble would come to Lewis and tell them the truth and say, "No, this, I'm in a jam. Can you help?" It might be debt. It might be a scandal involving small boys. It might be a scandal involving small boys. Small boys. 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 Any kind of scandal which a member seemed likely to be mixed up in, they'd come and ask if we could help. And if we could, we did. And we would do everything we can, because we would store up brownie points. I mean, that sounds a pretty nasty reason, but it's one of the reasons, is if we can get a chap out of trouble, then he'll do as we ask for ever more.
Welcome to Conspiracy Queries. Operation Central for technical problems. How are you doing? Still surviving the aftermath of the election? I'm glad everyone's happy now that it's all over. You don't get any of that, do you? It's just people complaining about it, no matter what side they're on. It's been kind of funny, though. I have to admit, I didn't predict. Predicted a lot of things, but I didn't predict I was going to be having so much fun in the aftermath. I didn't know that. But I am. I have to accept it. Like when, in the debate, when Hillary Clinton said that she'd be horrified if Trump didn't accept the results of the election. I guess her definition of horrified translates to anemic recount. Anyway, enjoy backing that horse. Tried to tell you a long time ago Bernie Sanders was supposed to be the guy, but once everyone knows, your national committee has manipulated the guy that really is more popular out of position. It's both criminal and stupid. So that's another sign of why she didn't win. And we should also be celebrating the fact that the Clintons will never be in power again, or so we'd hope. So we would think if we knew the same kinds of things we know about the Bush clan. And since we're talking about the Clintons, it's okay to talk about the Bushes, formerly perceived as direct opposites. But if you've spent any time with Carol Quigley's book, which I won't mention because if you go, which one, obviously you don't know which one I mean anyway. And if you've spent any time looking at the favors between these two families, it's hard not to conclude that it's a good thing that Hillary is done, even if you don't like Trump. So like Bernie says, case by case, if Trump does a good thing like killing the TPP, that strangely Hillary campaigned against, but you know she would have passed it if she got in. But she campaigned against it, so did Bernie, so did the other people that were close to the end. And there's Obama trying to push it through at the last second. You're done. It's over. Anyway, last week's conclusion to the two-parter with Lenny is still drawing feedback. Because how couldn't it, really? How couldn't it draw feedback when basically the essence of the last two episodes, if you're just joining us now, go back and listen to them, please. But basically what's happening here is that the movers and the players that you never get to know and see personally, the people that fund everything, the executive producers of Earth Incorporated are the ones who really control things. That's like four-fifths of the way, five-sevenths of the way maybe. And then, yeah, there's your little slices of pie at the bottom that, you know, the racists. And they were there. They're always there, though. And they were highlighted and made fun of, and we're supposed to believe that they were the ones that caused the election to go the wrong way. Well, they're just a sliver. They exist, the races and the sexes, but they're not the ones pushing the apple cart over. The ones who claim anything that's not CNN or Fox is fake news are the ones to blame. More on that later. And yes, that was a pun on the word moron. So yeah, basically last week what Lenny did was he connected the people behind the scenes of the Kennedy assassination, the JFK assassination, as people needing to achieve objectives, financial players, if you will, behind the scenes that weren't happy with JFK's decision to smash the CIA and JFK's decision to print money that isn't connected to the dragons and monsters that have authored the most recent collapse and the reason we all need three jobs just to fucking get by. So I know this shit's really hard to follow sometimes because you're working so hard to make ends meet. But one of the reasons you're working so hard to make ends meet is because you're not following it sometimes. We got to break the cycle somewhere. So when Lenny connects those people as being the folks who manipulated JFK out of the situation because it wasn't advantageous to them in a business sense, because that's all America is. Let's make more money than the other guy. That's also why you couldn't stop Trump, because he was being successful at what you espouse to be the greatest things in your country, rich and successful and self-determined. And then there's a guy doing that, going for the highest job in the land. Somehow it pisses half of you off. It is pretty funny when you look at it. But those same people that took over what was supposed to be happening after Kennedy's election were a cabal. And they didn't just do it on a whim and slap it together over a weekend. And it's not really hard to plan out a decade. We've heard of 5-year plans. Why can't there be 10-year plans? And if you're a CIA agent who is in Dallas the day JFK got killed and then later become the chief of the CIA and then later the vice president in the White House and then the president of the White House and on through the decades, you probably got a lot of influence, don't you, old man Bush? You must be drinking baby's blood. I don't know how you're still alive. It's amazing. We've lost so many great people this year. Creative, artistic, enjoyable people. I don't want to name them all, but you know who they are. The musicians and the artists, they got to die. Somehow Cheney's still running around out there with a gun looking for friends' faces to shoot up and get away with all the scammery that he's been profiting from over the decades of being involved in government and setting shit up so that then he can pivot over to the private sector and profit from that, and on it goes. And if your kid's dead, too fucking bad. He's rich. You're not. Keep going to work and complaining about how your cable bill's going up. This is the fake news, folks, as we've all been branded. If we aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, if we aren't one of those, if we aren't one of those organizations that has been from its inception saturated with a little thing called Operation Mockingbird. Remember we were talking about that last week? I'm going to talk about it again because that's in wantoknow.info. That's coming up with the chapter MK Ultra. Which is really key, because what that is it describes government-operated mind control systems that did exist, and we do have evidence of this, and it's not a conspiracy theory so much as a conspiracy. The only thing that's a theory is, just because they told us they stopped doing that a long time ago doesn't necessarily mean they did. So that's probably still going on, huh, in the news? All that bullshit that you just saw predicting the landslide that never happened? Those people? Over and over again, getting it wrong constantly. And yet still going back on for like $100,000 a season or whatever it is. I should get a wig or something, you know, and a, a little military jacket and pretend I'm one of these guys that gets paid to drop bombs on brown folks so that they can cause refugees to come back flooding into the country so you guys can complain about it or take them in lovingly while we continue to profit from their death. By the way, I'd like to thank the Saudis for helping us out with this, too. The Saudis, not really a nation, just a family of fucking freaks. Hey, is it Thursday night? Lock up your sons. Where were we? Oh, yeah. It's about health and life and death, so it kind of affects everybody. And it's sad, okay? Unfortunately, I'm going to take odds with it later on. But listen to this. The Globe and Mail is a Toronto publication that says it's a Canadian publication. Anyway, people have heard of it. It came out Monday, November 14th. This is the kind of stuff I wanted to get to, but the election was so busy. But it's still important, so I'm going to dive into this right now. Like so many mothers of healthy, cheerful toddlers, Jill Primoli-McGee was not terribly concerned when her two-year-old son, Jude, awoke with a low-grade fever one morning last May. She gave him Tylenol, which brought the fever down, then entertained Jude and his twin brother, Thomas, with blocks and robots until it was time to lay the boys in their side-by-side cribs for their afternoon naps. When she returned a few hours later to wake the twins, she found Jude motionless on his crib mattress. He wasn't breathing. She says, I started compressions and I called 911 right away. I left Thomas in his crib and I ran out to the driveway to get help because I knew I was hysterical and I knew I was going to need help. Neighbors on her street took turns performing CPR, etc., until the ambulance got there, and unfortunately for these people, this family of young kids and young parents, unfortunately, have lost their son. And they don't know why, so they've been really upset for quite a while, as you can completely understand that her and her husband and the siblings, obviously, are quite in hell about not knowing why their brother and their son is no longer with us. So then in August, they were tipped into a fresh sorrow when the coroner told them that Jude had died of the most prosaic of causes, the flu. She says, honestly, that was the first time I felt any anger about the situation. It was a weird anger because it wasn't directed at anybody, just at the situation. I felt really just sad and angry about it because it's so preventable, and we know that. Primoli-McGee is now trying to put her heartache to good use with a social media campaign designed to propel as many Canadians as possible to their local flu shot clinic. You know what? I know what I'm about to say and do here, and I lost the thread of that. So I'm going to go back and say it again and see if you can also find where it goes off the rails. she's trying to put her heartache about her son who died after getting a flu shot. She's trying to put her heartache to good use with a social media campaign designed to get the rest of us to get the flu shot. So, if you're making bullet points, her son got a flu shot and then he died, and now you're supposed to get a flu shot. Now, I know logic isn't really being taught in schools anymore, but I didn't think it was mandatory never to mention it. The campaign's Facebook and web pages of this trying to get everybody to get the shots together. Oh, I skipped something. Yeah. By the middle of mid-October, 227 people had posted their flu shot pictures to Instagram with the campaign's hashtag, For Jude, For Everyone, even Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi. And these folks are from Mississauga in Ontario. So imagine the mayor of Calgary jumping into the fray and telling us that the best way to fix the situation of this woman's son dying right after getting the shot is to get the shot also. Okay. She launched the effort last month. That'd be October, I guess, sometime. Doesn't matter. It's all garbage anyway. With a blitz of local television stations and an appearance on a new CTV morning show with Ben Mulroney. If you don't know who Ben Mulroney is, I'm jealous. Ben Mulroney was the son, is the son of a guy that used to be the prime minister. Oddly enough, the same prime minister that campaigned against NAFTA because it was a horrible liberal idea, and then he got into office as a conservative and initiated NAFTA. So we knew that was a scam. We knew we were getting ripped off, and millions of Canadians protested it, of course, as we always do when there's a problem like this. And every year there have been protests and different issues and meetings and stomping out, and they never listen to us, and they never want to go along with it. And that's been happening all through the 90s and the early aughts, and even most recently when they were telling us they were going to shove the TPP down our throats. But strangely, 2 days after Trump gets in as president-elect, Justin Trudeau is on the phone saying, "Yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full. How high should I jump? I'm sure happy to renegotiate this NAFTA thing with you." Why does Trump get to turn the ear of the Canadian leader when 3 decades of complaining Canadians haven't been able to even get a response from any leader, regardless of party? Maybe people really are afraid of Trump. I guess. Anyway, back to this poor family. And once again, I have to say, I'm not happy that this child has died. I just don't think that gives you the right to inflict a shame-driven illogic onto the rest of us to do the same mistake that you made. It's really not fair. You're using emotion to do this. Listen to this part, folks. "Most of the public feedback has been overwhelmingly enthusiastic. But a cadre of internet trolls," I guess that's what I'm going to be, right into a label immediately without any explanation, "internet trolls and vaccination opponents has also stepped up on her message," stepped on her message, "suggesting on Facebook and elsewhere that it might have been the Tylenol or even the flu shot which Jude received last December that killed him. The fact that Jude was vaccinated against influenza makes Primoli McGee's campaign a tricky sell," it says here in the paper. Even the paper realizes, how the shit are we going to sell this nonsense? "Something she is well aware of. The flu shot, which is generally about 50% effective," so it says here without accreditation, because that number always changes, so whoever wrote this just threw that out. Anyway, it's generally about 50% effective, they say. "Nonetheless, Primoli McGee often thinks of the chain of infection the virus had to travel to reach her son. What if one person, one link, had chosen vaccination, thus breaking the chain? Then it could have stopped somewhere before it got to Jude," she reasoned. "Then he never would have gotten the flu and he would still be here. What about this? Jude got the vaccine and is no longer with us. What's the guarantee that the kid before him in the chain getting the vaccine would have stopped there any more than it didn't stop at Jude?" Now, this is really uncomfortable to talk about because I'm also a parent and I know everybody gets hot about this, and I'm not any sort of positive feeling towards the unfortunate passing of this child. But Jesus, think about what you're talking about. This thing doesn't even work. I'm going to put this whole vaccine thing to bed right now, so tune in and get it on. Is this one of those Facebook things? Are we doing one of those YouTube things with this? Okay, let's see if we can do a YouTube thing with this. Okay? There's four categories in the flu shot. I'm going to say this right now. I've said it a lot, but if you don't know me, you're hearing it for the first time, so I'm going to do the best I can. There's four kinds of people. It's the kind of person that gets the flu shot and gets the flu. There's the kind of person that gets the flu shot and doesn't get the flu. And there's a person that doesn't get the flu shot and doesn't get the flu. Hopefully that's everybody, right? That's what you want to be. And then there's the person that doesn't get the flu shot and does get the flu. What I don't have anywhere is any kind of data from any of these companies that sell any of this stuff that they can understand any of those four categories. They don't. They can't. Every year they say, well, we don't really know. They don't bother to test it. Because once you do the hard data on those four, you'll see that it's folly. But it's easier to say, oh, we know what we're talking about, just get it. And then you do. And then several months later, they go, gosh darn it, you know what? The strain this year that we made was not quite as good and accurate as we'd hoped. But, you know, we're glad you got it anyway. We'll try better next year. And then they do that again next year. And so it goes. So I'm not your doctor. But if I were, I'd tell you not to get a flu shot because there's no proof. There's no proof. You don't know if it's stopping your flu or not, but you definitely know it's shit going in your body that wasn't there before. So I hope you're, I'm pretty sure your little movement's going to fail because most people are going to see through that. And we're not all being fooled by such an easy trick. I don't even think you know that it's illogical. I don't even think you realize that you're pulling the wool over our eyes. I'm not even mad at you. I'm just calling it out and making sure it stops because it's nonsense. We're back to wantoknow.info because this is the essential website for everything that you need to know about the scamorama that's going on around us all the time. Wantoknow.info. Please don't make me spell it. K-N-O-W, is that kind of no? Wantoknow.info. Although sometimes I want to know as just straight up N-O. Last week we talked about, this whole thing is like about psychopathy, and it's basically the blueprint of how everything is done. So on this incredibly widespread, touches on really every aspect of the scam of the game. And they have movies and everything. It's a wonderful site, wantoknow.info, but we are specifically focusing on lifting the veil, because that is the blue. Once you read this thing, I don't see how you're ever going to look at the news the same way ever again. MK Ultra. Yeah, even though last time we did talk about Operation Paperclip, Operation Mockingbird. That's what it was. Operation Mockingbird, where the CIA basically infiltrated themselves into the news creation or supposedly reporting organizations of the American networks, thereby influencing the direction of the news and controlling the feedback, etc., therefore shaping and controlling the things the way you want them to go. And, for example, I don't know this to be a fact, but it is often said that, what's his name, the son of Gloria Vanderbilt Jeans, rich guy, one of the richest guys ever, Anderson Cooper 360, which is a funny last name, is a, he changed it to that, you know, it used to be Vanderbilt. But now it's 360. But anyway, Anderson Cooper 360 was a CIA something or other at some point. I don't know. He denies it, but he says he was there a long time ago and no longer is. But you can never trust with these guys. Once you're in, you're in. It's like the mob. You know, it's like the mafia. You really believe, you know, Al Pacino or somebody in one of those movies? If he says he's out, no, you keep pulling me back in, right? So you're not getting out. So please don't say that kind of thing. It's kind of frustrating to think you think anybody falls for that anymore. So that's what's going on with Operation Mockingbird. They fudge the news. It's lies. It's always been. It's been like that for a long time. And now people are starting to tell the truth about all these friggin' pedophiles, a lot of them in power. So now they're saying, oh, there's fake news problems. It's so transparent if you spend any time on this. So let's move to the next chapter of wantoknow.info called Chapter 5, MK Ultra. And you know what's great about this is, you know, you hear this and people think it's all nonsense because they can't believe it and they don't want to believe it, but that's too bad. It's true. Here we go. In the 50s and early 60s, the agency, CIA, gave mind-altering drugs to hundreds of unsuspecting Americans in an effort to explore the possibilities of controlling human consciousness. I'll say that again. Explore the possibilities of controlling human consciousness. Who did you think was going to win the election again? Many of the human guinea pigs were mental patients, prisoners, drug addicts, and prostitutes. Wow. People who could not fight back, it is quoted, as one agency officer put it. And when they say agency, they mean the CIA. In one case, a mental patient in Kentucky was dosed with LSD continuously for 174 days. So that sounds fair. That's from the New York Times. MKUltra is the code name given to a CIA research operation into biological behavioral engineering, also known as mind control, which people always shun as a thing. They think that sounds crazy, like some nutty 50s spy movie. But that's because it was all dreamed up in the 50s by spies. It's real. Many people are familiar with the operation, but incorrectly assume that it was limited to LSD research. While there were plenty of resources devoted to LSD research, it was only one area of a vast field of mind control operations. MKUltra researcher Ike Feldman said himself that the LSD, that was just the tip of the iceberg. Espionage, assassinations, dirty tricks, drug experiments, sexual encounters, and the study of prostitutes for clandestine use. That's what I was doing when I worked for George White and the CIA. MKUltra had several precursors. There was Project Chatter in 1947, which tested drugs such as the infamous scopolamine during interrogations. There was Project Bluebird in 1949, which began studies into hypnosis. The document describing the initiation of Project Bluebird outlines these special problems, among many others, that they were hoping to address were, can we in a matter of an hour, 2 hours, one day, etc., induce an hypnotic condition in an unwilling subject to such an extent that he will perform an act for our benefit? Like, if that doesn't sound crazy to you. Like, it's real. Don't kid yourself. It's real. But does that sound crazy to you? Like, if when you really read it, you know, when you see the words on a page, it's just like, yeah, whatever. But when you read it, it's like, that's what these people are doing. Can we, in a matter of an hour, 2 hours, a day, whatever, induce a hypnotic condition in an unwilling subject, which is completely against the law, by the way, right? To such an extent that he will perform an act for our benefit. Jesus. And this is like a long time ago. And this is 1947, man. That's where they were at in 1947. This is 1947. They're coming up with things like this. Now, take a look at your iPhone and look at the one you had last year and the one you had 5 years ago and understand the technology explosion that has carried your crummy old iPhone from 2010 into this pretty cool thing you got going on right now. And apply that same logic to, say, 50, 60 years of clandestine behind the scenes, behind the laboratories, behind the proprietary laboratories that you're not allowed to know, and see what kind of things they've been working on there. They dreamed this up as a desire in 47. I don't know what kind of watch you have, but I think they've had lots of time to get it done. And when you see the way people are, I think it's been very successful. I think hypnosis has been a fantastically successful project. Here's the next point. Can we create by post-hypnotic control an action contrary to an individual's basic moral principles? Yeah, I think we can do that. I think they got that done a long time ago. Can we guarantee total amnesia under any and all conditions? Yes. Yes, they can guarantee total amnesia, but when you find out how, you'll probably shit your pants. Can we alter a person's personality? How long will it hold? Long enough to kill a guy, and then after you're arrested for it, you go, I don't know what happened. I don't know where I was. I don't know how the powder got on my hands. I'm just a patsy. That's how a patsy can take down a president, by the way. So they're trying to find post-hypnotic control of an action contrary to an interest. These are just the guiding principles of their obviously Luciferian-derived, Saturnalian, devil-fucking objectives. Because who else would do this? I just want to get a foot rub and watch a movie. That's what I want to do. But these guys, this is what they want to find out. Guaranteeing total amnesia under any and all conditions? How can we alter a person's personality? How long will it hold? Can we devise a system for making unwilling subjects into willing agents and then transfer that control to untrained agency agents in the field by use of codes or identifying signs or credentials? That's probably not going to fall apart as a plan, huh? Try to devise it. Unwilling subjects are going to become willing and they're going to transfer that control to untrained people out in the field doing CIA work by using codes and shit, and they're untrained and they're trying to identify things. It's a great plan. Nothing's going to go wrong with that. Project Artichoke began in 1951 with a scope of, quotes, can we get control of an individual to the point where he will do our bidding against his will and even against fundamental laws of nature such as self-preservation? Hey, also, this stuff's all footnoted, okay? So if you're going to try to call bullshit, look it up first and then call bullshit, because this guy has footnotes everywhere. All of the above projects were shuttled into MKUltra in 1953 under the Technical Services Division, combining over 150 sub-projects, undertaken at over 80 institutions, including universities, hospitals, prisons, pharmaceutical companies. Many of the projects were covertly run through front organizations without the knowledge of the institution that hosted them. I'm so proud. The experiments and operations under MKUltra have been shrouded in extreme secrecy. So they could get away with it. Yeah, right. When it was enacted, then CIA Director Alan Dulles exempted the program from normal financial controls, allowed the technical services staff to begin experiments without contracts or written agreements with leadership, and ordered the financial office to pay any cost blindly on the signature of Sidney Gottlieb. I'll admit, I don't know who that is. Let's look him up. The CIA document 17748 states that there are just two individuals in TSD who have full substantial knowledge of the program, and most of that knowledge is unrecorded. Both are highly skilled, highly motivated, professionally competent individuals. Part of their competence lies in their command of intelligence tradecraft. Intelligence tradecraft. Cool word. In protecting the sensitive nature of the American intelligence capability to manipulate human behavior, the stated goal. And you know they do that in Operation Mockingbird with the CNNs and all of that stuff that molded your head into the... Is it starting to click together? It should be. This is a Lego chunk for the recent election. Lego chunk. Part of their competence lies in their command of intelligence tradecraft. In protecting the sensitive nature of the American intelligence capability to manipulate human behavior, They apply need-to-know doctrine to their professional associates and their clerical assistants to a maximum degree. TSD has pursued a policy of minimum documentation in keeping with the high sensitivity of some of the projects. The lack of consistent records precludes use of routine inspection procedures and raised a variety of questions regarding management and fiscal controls. The two individuals the document refers to are likely Sidney Gottlieb, the director of MKUltra. We didn't have to look him up. And Richard Helms, the deputy director of the CIA. In 1973, when Helms became the director of the CIA, that's right before George Bush Sr. became the CIA director in 76, he ordered all of the available MKUltra files to be, can you guess? Yeah, destroyed. Thanks to a clerical error, about 20,000 files survived the destruction order. There's always a screw-up, eh? Even in the best-laid plans of mice and men, like that plane that was supposed to crash into the third building at the WTC, but somehow something went wrong, and it got off track, and they had to shoot it down in Pennsylvania, and several hours later, the building that they had pre-wired to go down with the other two should have, and they said, pull it anyway, and just tell everyone the ground nearby lost its integrity enough for the third building that wasn't hit by a plane to come down to the ground and in the time it takes for a phone to ring three times. But going back to this Gottlieb fella, Sidney Gottlieb, the director of MKUltra, and Richard Helms, not only were most of the files destroyed, but many experiments were so sensitive that they were never recorded in the first place, so we must understand that as brutal and astonishing as the recorded experimentation is, we're only seeing a tip of the iceberg. Another file, MKUltra document 87624, says 6% of the projects are of such an ultra-sensitive nature that they cannot and should not be handled by means of contracts, which would associate the CIA or the government with the work in question.
Plausible deniability.
The 6% of the current research effort now lies entirely within the two well-defined fields of endeavor. As present, this results in ridiculous contracts, often with cutouts, which do not spell out the scope or intent of the work. So basically, tons of money pulling off crimes against people, getting people to do things against their own will, getting people to do immoral things for the purposes of unwitting testing, entrapment, just completely fucking up people's lives. Because they think they can, and they have gotten away with it. And worse still, they've been very successful, because when most people hear about this, they think it's a cartoon, that it's nonsense. But it isn't, though. So I just want to come to the conclusion now of that chapter. It says, upon MKUltra becoming public knowledge in 1971, the CIA was quick to claim that the program was halted due to a lack of production. The available evidence clearly shows that this is a lie. From the documents that survived Director Helms' destruction order, we can already see the potential for a Manchurian candidate, which is a mind-controlled assassin. So what happened to MKUltra? 14-year CIA veteran Victor Marchetti has stated in numerous interviews that the claim MKUltra was halted was merely a cover story, and that the operation went completely black. In other words, research continued at the highest level of secrecy. Is it possible that academic research into hypnosis and other forms of mind control have been deliberately marginalized from mainstream entertainment media and academics in order to keep its potential use within a military-industrial complex a secret? After all, MKUltra researcher Dr. Ewan Cameron became the president of the World Psychiatric Association in 1961 and also served as presidents of the Canadian and American Psychiatric Associations. It is important to reiterate that not only does the available evidence of MKUltra comprise a very small portion of the documents that were created, but many of the experiments were never recorded in the first place. So, you know, you don't know what kind of things went wrong in the food for thought section at the end of the chapter with the documents that were destroyed. What kind of things were in the documents? I mean, if we're finding out this terrible stuff, what was the really, really terrible stuff that they did manage to fully suppress? And did they come up with a mind control technology? Well, this is when the jokes come out about the tinfoil hat. Look at you wearing conspiracy guy doing tinfoil hat thing, man. Yeah, well, I would wear a tinfoil hat. I'd happily wear a tinfoil hat, but unfortunately, even a tinfoil hat is not strong enough to keep the radio waves from a stingray box, which is something that the police use to intercept your phone calls and your information without your knowledge. So maybe if you had a tinfoil hat that was strong enough, you could keep those cops out of your phone. Who knows? Speaking of nonsense, like, this isn't bad enough the way everything's going in the world. What's his name wants to come back? Tony Blair wants to come back? This guy's a war criminal, and he wants to be a leader again. So he'll probably make it. Don't you think most people that become leaders are often war criminals? Tony Blair. Tony Blair's a fascinating guy. He's been traveling around with some kind of money-making venture, making money as a guy who can talk about how to shape the world after you look back on your shitty track record as a prime minister that went to war for no reason. People line up and pay big bucks for that kind of information. So that's what he's doing. Tony Blair is back. Yeah, that's what it says in Russia Today about Tony Blair. An example should be set, because he faces new charges in Parliament for misleading the UK over Iraq. Yeah, this is the guy that wants to come back and get into British politics. This is like George Bush coming back to the States and going, gonna have another disaster with another trade center collapse and then off to another fake war for a while. And so good luck with that whole Tony Blair thing. Not at all looking satanic at all, that guy. I don't know. Have you seen the way some people age? Some people don't age at all, like George Clooney and this Tony Blair. He looks like one of those masks that some of the pedophiles have been playing around with in Pizzagate. He does. He looks like one of those painted weird... Do you know about Pizzagate? Hey, listen, if you're going to talk to me about politics and you don't know about Pizzagate, then you're not going to talk to me about politics. There's stuff out there with like 16-year-old girls putting it together better than the New York Times and this kind of thing. Like, all you have to do is read it. It's on 4chan. It's on 8chan. It's on Reddit. It's on Facebook sometimes, but they scrub it, and the same goes for Twitter, because those guys all know each other, etc., and it doesn't benefit them if all the world finds out about just how many people are involved in the sick and twisted world of illegally and horrifyingly, if that's a word I can reborrow from the recent campaign, doing terrible things to children. I'm not going to swear, but they're terrible things. They really are. So let's talk about a couple of them. Yeah, so what's happened with the whole pedophile scandal is that a lot of the people involved with the Hillary Clinton campaign trying to make her the president are apparently involved in some strange code language back and forth in the emails at the very least. And when some more intrepid people have put these code words together and you learn the little chart that goes with it, you understand that, wow, this is some pretty sick stuff. You know, the fella James Elefantis, who has been interviewed, and it's really uncomfortable. But you got to know, like, if it's true, of course they're going to work to cover it up. And if it's false, then I don't know how could it live this long. But the New York Times did a slam of anybody believing or looking into the Pizzagate scandal because they've been trying to get people to believe that only the big news networks are telling the truth, as we have already heard they are not, and anybody else is lying, even though people that aren't profiting from this at all are trying to get to the bottom of it. I know it's hard to believe, but when you think about Jimmy Savile in Britain, he was a famous guy for years, therefore lots of people knew what he was up to. including people in the BBC and including people in the British royal family who may or may not have been taking part in some of his sick fuckery. So, people knew. And when people are doing horrible things, people do know. Why do they always find out about it right after the guy dies? Because they knew about it and they were just holding on to it. So that's the problem with these sick people, is they're woven very deeply into the fabric of society.
Anyone with any sense who was in trouble would come to the Whips and tell them the truth and say, "No, this, I'm in a jam. Can you help?" It might be debt. It might be scandal involving small boys. It might be small boys. Any kind of scandal which a member seemed likely to be mixed up in, they'd come and ask if we could help. And if we could, we did. And we would do everything we can, because we would store up brownie points. I mean, that sounds a pretty nasty reason, but it's one of the reasons, is if we can get a chap out of trouble, then he'll do as we ask for ever more.
And I guess the most uncomfortable thing about all of this was brought to my attention as a truth by a friend of mine. We were in discussion. And he said that, unfortunately, what's going to happen is at some point, you, meaning me, because we were talking, but meaning collectively me, you are going to know somebody that's involved in this bloody global pedophile-based network that goes around the world. And that's probably true, and that scares me. But not too much, because I know I'm not doing it. And I know what I'm going to do to anybody that I find out is. But the New York Times decided to take down this article. So here's an article right back in their face. This is a blow-by-blow dissection of the New York Times article. Here it is. It's posted by Son of Satire and Pizzagate. It says, "Below is an objective analysis which does an exceptional job of exposing the pseudo-intellectual integrity of mainstream media." Now, again, I'm doing this because they, mainstream, keep railing about the fake news, but they're the fake news, right? CIA Operation Mockingbird still in existence? Right. This is in relation to a propaganda piece aimed at discouraging people from investigating the issue further. I care not if I receive no upvotes for this, as I did not write this myself. I merely brought it here and reformatted it. So this guy has done a great thing and put this up, and now listen to this. "The purpose of this thread is to pick apart the litany of factual errors, mischaracterizations, and fallacies that appeared in Cecilia Kang's article, Fact Check, This Pizzeria is Not a Child Trafficking Site, New York Times, November 21, 2016. The goal here is to build an objective case that the editorial staff of the New York Times is guilty of some of the very same fake news tactics it's currently decrying. And I'm going to list every factually problematic excerpt I could find." So, in quotes, it says, "All of them alleged something that made Mr. Alefantis's jaw drop, that Comet Ping Pong was the home base of a child abuse ring led by Hillary Clinton and her campaign chief, John D. Podesta, who, by the way, looks exactly like the sketch drawing of the little girl gone missing in Portugal in 1995, along with the other suspect who looks exactly like his brother." Anyway, that's a straw man argument. Kang claims, no sources cited, that online investigators allege that the child abuse ring is led by Hillary Clinton and John D. Podesta. Well, I've seen hundreds of threads on Reddit and 4 and 8chan, and I've seen very few people push the argument that she and Podesta are leaders of anything. The vast majority of speculation so far has asserted that Hillary and Podestas are involved in a child abuse ring. This may seem like quibbling over semantics, but to the normal time New York Times reader, led by is a far more extreme and unbelievable allegation than involved in. Right off the bat, Kang insinuates, without any evidence or quotes, that the entire open-source investigation sounds like a mob of hyperbolic, delusional conspiracy theorists. And then the next quote is, Elefantis found dozens of made-up articles about Mrs. Clinton kidnapping, molesting, and trafficking children in the restaurant's back rooms. The articles appeared on Facebook and on websites such as The New Nationalist and The Vigilant Citizen, with one headline blaring, Pizzagate, How 4chan Uncovered the Sick World of Washington's Occult Elite. None of it was true. Well, that's a straw man also. Kang's uses of sources in this passage is evasive, and so scrambles the chronology of events in the Pizzagate scandal. When she mentions dozens of made-up articles, she provides no specific examples or hyperlinks. Furthermore, goes on to imply that all of these articles specifically identify Hillary as the individual going around personally kidnapping children. Any sane people would doubt such a story. But of course, that's not what the vast aggregate of investigators is claiming at all. Once again, Kang appears to be deliberately exaggerating and oversimplifying. And so it goes on, and so read the New York Times article and just, you know, take it step at a time, because it is really ridiculous. They do set it up. And so it's like, so what are you hiding? And there's some great pictures in here, too, of the bizarre, to say the least, art on the walls of this pizza place that is beside another pizza place that sports the... sports, what I just learned, is the logo for pedophiles. So, as I understand it from the FBI report on these things from a while ago, if there's a little triangle and then it's inside of a larger triangle, like a drawing or a sculpture, and it's blue, that's the signal, that's the symbol that's a pedophile. That's like a Batman beacon for pedophiles and for boys, because it's blue, you know, like their little bedrooms that we think are innocent, pink and blue. But these people, they use the blue little triangle that represents the little kid, and then the bigger triangle represents the adult sick bastard who is with that boy. And that's their little calling card. Isn't that neat? I hope I can, if I locate those, I'm going to start paying more attention and see if I can see those in public, because they're out there. The pizza place beside the other pizza place, or near the place in D.C., and affiliated with, has that a little triangle symbol. It's not blue, but it's the exact same symbol if you Google it up. And there's a symbol for girls, too, of course. That's a little heart instead of a triangle. A little, guess what color? Pink heart, and then that's inside a larger pink heart, and that's the symbol for pedophile with little girls. This is really sick to talk about, huh? I didn't really want to talk about this. When I knew I was going to come back and do the show, I didn't really want to talk about this thing, topic, subject matter. It's nauseating. It's unbelievable, but that's how you know it's got to be stopped. And if anybody knows anybody that's doing it, rat them out. We got to stop all this. But mostly the people in government and the people running human trafficking and the people investigating human traffic running that then die later. That's also weird.
I'm in a jam. Can you help? It might be scandal involving any kind of scandal. And we would do everything we can. That sounds a pretty nasty reason, but it's one of the reasons. Is if we can get a chap out of trouble, he'll do as we ask forever more. Any kind of scandal.
You know, I'm making a rally cry at this point. I'm gonna try to organize with some of the people that regularly contribute to the show, and both in interview capacity and research capacity. And what we're going to try to do is put together some really easy to digest and understand data, dossiers perhaps, up on the site where you can see involvements et cetera with some of these heavy hitters like the Podesta brothers, who weirdly were in Portugal, it says, apparently at that time.
Any kind of scandal.
And yet they don't get investigated. They were in Portugal at the time. They go there regularly. They were at a relative of Freud's place, who's already been busted for all kinds of child...
Any kind of scandal.
Stuff as well, yeah. The same Freud grandson. Or maybe it's his nephew. I don't know. Some freak in that line. The other guy convinced everybody how to create propaganda to make us believe all this shit. So it's a pretty sick family when you think about it. Freud's and you take it all in. Anyway, yeah, so that's that one. Here's another. This is a great one. This is John Podesta. It says, how many people would have had any suspicions of a small pizza restaurant on the northwest side of Washington, D.C. without the Podesta emails coming from WikiLeaks? Not many. The answer to this question should help in understanding how this could go on in plain sight. If you're part of the in crowd, you simply do not speak of it. But if you do, you suicided or disappeared or committed. These emails, an obvious code, is like finding the frame of a complex four-dimensional puzzle. You know there's something inside, but the puzzle pieces are scattered across time and the digital universe. These emails are a key piece of substantive evidence and the one missing variable that is not present in many other conspiracy theories, actual language from the actors in positions of power. Then it says here that the mafia members have had damning evidence come from wiretaps in which they use language in odd contexts, code. I remember I used to do that when I was a kid. We would buy hash or eighths or whatever it was, and we would say, hey, you got any gum? And it's like, yeah, sure, come on over and we'll have some grilled cheese sandwiches. And then we had these weird codes. It's the same kind of thing. I mean, it's the same bullshit. But when you read these emails and you understand the different codes that some of these investigative sleuths on the the counterculture websites have been able to put together, it's a gateway into a pizza gateway. Hashtag Pizzagate. Way into an investigation into a ring of pedophilia, satanic ritual abuse. You got your human sacrifice and cannibalism. Listen, you know, if you're going to have human sacrifice, you might as well have cannibalism. It's more efficient. Did you know the Podestas were involved with this, and the Clintons and George Soros?
Any kind of scandal.
Friend of the show was referenced a couple episodes ago, and David Brock, who is also the DN of the DNC, yeah, and James Alefantis, who it was pointed out to me, if you kind of look at his name in a sort of a weird double focus, it sort of means I love kids, Alefantis. And he's got some weird pictures online too, all covered in blood, naked on his hands and knees, but that's probably normal. I don't know. I don't do it, but maybe that's a normal thing other folks do. I don't know. Do you ever paint yourself up in blood and put on like eyeliner like Alice Cooper, only instead of performing for money in front of a bunch of people, you're crawling around naked in the basement of a pizza shop with steel riveted to the walls? Is that something you do? Me neither. We're coming to get you guys, I guess. It looks like a tipping point. It looks like this election. I don't know about Trump or anything, and people were saying, oh, God, he's a terrible guy, but maybe this election is nothing more than a tipping point to get enough of us people that are hungry to find these monsters to actually rip open the fabric of where they've been hiding underneath, and we're going to come and get them. So let's hope. Let's hope we're getting close.
And we would do everything we can. If we can get a chap out of trouble, he'll do as we ask for evermore.
All our society is run by insane people for insane objects, objectives. And I think that's what I sussed when I was 16 and 12, way down the line. But I expressed it differently all through my life. It's the same thing I'm expressing all the time. But now I can put it into that sentence that I think we're being run by maniacs for maniacal ends, you know. If anybody can put on paper what our government and the American government, etc., and the Russian, Chinese, what they are actually trying to do, you know, on how what they think they're doing. Mm. I'd be very pleased to know what they think they're doing. I think they're all insane. You know, but I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. You know, that's what's insane about it.
You probably heard about Justin Trudeau. He's the Prime Minister of Canada, and for a long time, especially outside of Canada, he's been loved around the world as the new handsome, go-to, dreamy-eyed guy. The best-looking leader of any country in the whole world right now, say some. Not me, but plenty do. Well, you know what they're talking about. He doesn't have that sort of fat, friggin' I'm ripping you off businessman waddle that so many of them like to carry around from Henry Kissinger on down to Stephen Bloody Harper. But Justin right now is in a lot of trouble because he praised Castro and made some positive comments about him when I guess a lot of people in the world would have preferred that he shit all over him for being a socialist and a repressor against his own people, and they didn't like the way Justin said what he said and tempered his remarks. But I gotta say, just back off a little bit, okay? Because, I mean, you know, Dick Cheney's kid is gonna die one day and probably say nice things about him. That's the inference, anyway, from Vice magazine. Vice.com says that great article there this week. Check it out, where Justin Trudeau isn't really the son of Pierre Trudeau, but when Pierre Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada in the 70s, went down to Cuba to fuck around down there, probably literally, and he brought his wife, and apparently she had a pretty good connection with Fidel there, who was quite taken with her lovely eyes. You can read about it. Pretty funny. But the best thing is at the end of the article, when you see a picture of Pierre Trudeau, Justin Trudeau in the middle, and to the right of him is Castro. Two of those guys look almost identical, and one of them doesn't. And that one's daddy.
Any kind of scandal.
So maybe Justin is, justified in saying, he was a pretty good guy. Because when your dad dies, you probably want to say nice things, too. Hang in there, Justin. It's a family thing. We get it. Might not say something so crude about Justin, but I'm kind of pissed off at him right now because the real thing I want to talk about with Justin isn't so much who his daddy is, but that he's trying to set up an infrastructure bank with a company that nobody really knows anything about called BlackRock. Investment, some kind of financial company. Never heard of them, and then I looked them up. They're all over the world. But you never hear them. You hear Altamira, you hear a lot of different things, but you don't hear these guys, BlackRock. And they're sitting there designing an infrastructure bank so that they can fund, at a high interest rate, I'm sure, 3P buildings, you know? Public-private partnership. So that basically works out like, so say you need a hospital, so all the taxpayers pay for the hospital, and then those guys build it, and then when they build it, we have to use the hospital, and we pay them to use it.
All our society is run by insane people for insane objectives.
It's not supposed to be like that, and it shouldn't cost that much money to do, and if only there were a mechanism to make that happen. It's funny, there is actually. You don't need to go to BlackRock, some foreign-based company, and set yourself up with a Goldman Sachs, who are probably also involved in this infrastructure bank of Canada that we do need to build roads, highways, bridges, schools, hospitals, all that kind of crap. Everybody needs that, right? Well, we already have the means to do that with the Bank of Canada. And so amazing to me that in 1974, around the same time that likely that Castro was popping the old mom, it turns out that Daddy, Mr. Trudeau Sr., Pierre, the one that even more people love and even more people hate, he actually took Canada off its own bank that was the bank that created stuff like the healthcare system that was so cheap and affordable at like a very low interest rate. We talked about this on the show before with Doug Force and a couple other guys in previous episodes, but it's coming around again because everything Justin is trying to do now and reassemble and is getting away with because hardly anybody talks about it is that he's trying to rejig Canada into the corporatocracy that we obviously need to avoid. But he's following through on the work of his dad, or the guy that vacationed with his dad, however it turns out.
Any kind of scandal.
I say we get a paternity test and a psychopathy test right away. So instead of funding our own shit, Justin, you want to farm us out and our kids and our future and our mortgages and further sell us out like the globalist punks that just got turfed down south. I think you're riding a wave that's already crested. You really got to stop this thing and just open up the bloody Bank of Canada. It's already there. We'll all profit from it, not just you guys. That's the idea anyway. But your dad, when he was the prime minister, made sure that his finance minister, Jean Chrétien, dismantled Canada's adherence and connection to the Bank of Canada on a financial tether that was quite prosperous and comfortable and afforded us many things, and we could sure as fuck use right now. But now you want to sell us out to the same guys that brought us to a screeching halt in 07. You, sir, are the enemy. You know that thing they say about looking in the mirror to find your enemy? Well, you do that all the time with your selfies. The guy in the back there, lurking at the folks' wedding in the middle of summer with his shirt off. You're selling us out here. That's like making me buy your car, and then I do. And then you charge me every time I want to ride around in it. I don't know why people don't see this, but, you know, there's a lot of other circus going on, and that's why I wanted to specifically talk about some of these things this week. But people are figuring it out. You can't get away with it forever. The plan is coming apart at the seams. And a lot of us are pretty happy about it. So whether or not it was your dad, it was an egregious mistake. I'm sure you think of him as your father one way or the other, because he is one way or the other. And he did a bad thing and you're following up. He got the touchdown, and now you're popping the conversion through the uprights for the extra point. Go Red Blacks. Okay. Well, just so you know, lots of us are aware and we're watching and we're paying attention, and it's kind of fun when the honeymoon wears off, huh? Enjoy that shit. Okay, folks, that's all for this week. We're going to have some good guests next week, and we're building towards an unbelievably painful climax for this season of the show. Unfortunately, we're going to have to spend a lot of time around this whole pedophile issue because so many people are involved in it, and we're going to name a lot of them in the coming weeks. So please do stick around and tell your friends about the show. And you know what? I'm kind of doing this on my own now. I'm whittled down to a very small workforce indeed, and a very small band of people helping me out here. And I really have to thank everybody that has contributed in the way of comments. And you know what? Some even people have contributed financially. And I can't tell you how kind that is, and how happy I am that I know I'm not just yelling down the tube slide at the local playground to no one at the other end. Obviously, it's having some kind of an effect. So thank you guys for being there. And if you want to go to patreon.com/conspiracyqueries, you can do that. If you want to just go a one-time donate button because you don't want to be tracked as someone that's supporting a show that's calling them out where they're lying. Thanks. I really appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Be sure to subscribe to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Parr on iTunes and to our YouTube channel. If you want to support the show and help create more episodes, you can become a patron at patreon.com/conspiracyqueries. We appreciate your feedback, so send us comments, complaints, or queries of your own to conspiracyqueries@gmail.com, or you can post them on our website at conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.